flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
Back with you live from FanFest. It's Annie and Elston, a Saturday Scrub Show edition of the program. Along with Braden Soprenant and Annie Heilbrun, Craig Elston with you. We are underneath the 97.3 The Fan tent, section 113 of the concourse. Hope to see you out here. Love to see all of the listeners of the show come by. Charisma just came by. Dropped off a gift for you, I see.
Nice. So, Charisma got one of these photo books from the 2022 season at the garage sale.
Nice.
So I have one. I'm in it, in a photo with Manny, because Joe Musgrove was nice enough to grab a few Polaroids of me doing the sideline reporting with some players, and they made the book. They got in the, I think one of them got in the book, or one or two. And I'm too afraid to open that one. So she got, and I had to like really beg for that one. So she found me another one, so I can actually look at the inside. Yes,
you just need multiple
excited.
Everything. Like,
what am I to keep its resale value? Is that what it was?
I just want to keep it in case, like, you know, I'm ever like a grandma or something. You know, it's still good. It's still like there.
But
this one I can actually look at, which I'm really excited.
The 1,500 schedules we have to print out for her.
Yes, exactly. It took me 3 years to get it, but that's good. That's fine.
You get one laminated, one not laminated, one she can draw on, one she can...
Appreciate you.
Right. Appreciate the ink at Odyssey.
Thanks. Really under the, like, it took a lot. So, anyways.
I got to admit, one downside of being here, there's not very many downsides. The only one is I can't be at the garage sale. Because, like, usually that's my jam.
It's awesome.
Is to go find, like, the most obscure jersey in history. As you know very well, it was at a previous garage sale that I found my Kevin Elster jersey, 2003. It's got the 125th anniversary patch on it. Here's the kicker. Kevin Elster never played for the Padres. Oh, it was only spring training. But somebody made him a game uniform nonetheless, and there it was, one letter away. I always had the dream when I bought it in 2003 that I would take it down and ask Brian Prilliman to take the R off and replace it with an N on Elster, and then I'd be Elston, and then it'd be my jersey.
That's
but
awesome.
I did not have the sack to do it. I just never, ever even came close to asking him. And then, of course, the letters went out of style, and, you know, 15 variations later, I can't do it. So.
The garage sale's cool. I mean, you can find also, like, stuff to work out in, like, stuff to work out in or sleep in. Like, they just have so many old, like, dry fits and shirts and all
I've had friends, like, buy... I've had friends like buy like baseball pants and use them for softball.
Seriously?
Right? Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, they're legit like MLB baseball pants, right?
Yeah.
I've seen.
Unless they're the Nikes from last year, in which case they might be not.
Yeah, like, never know. Yeah, exactly.
Like a little see through.
Little ripped. My two buddies are like super diehard Nick Martinez fans, so they bought his two, whatever jerseys they had available, they bought the two camo ones. There's a lot of cool stuff there, and I was talking to Tyler, who's usually in our chat. He went to the garage sale. He says they got a ton of like the old blue stuff still that they still have left over that obviously a lot of people didn't buy the last couple of years, but that's a cool thing because it's all player-issued stuff.
It is, exactly. It's like straight from the clubhouse, some of it. And when the City Connects are retired this year, I bet you some of that stuff ends up at the garage sale next year as they roll out new City Connects, or at least the next few years. So you'll be able to pick up some stuff. Yeah.
Have we ever thought about what the next City Connect is going to look like?
I think a lot of like people my age are hoping it's going to be blue and orange.
I hope it's a retro one, but I've seen people saying that's lazy. I think it's cool.
I don't think it's lazy.
Well, I mean, if they just went straight 84 or something like that.
Like maybe a modern retro.
Lazy.
I don't know. Like, can you retro modern, but make it kind of cool?
A modern version of the blue and orange would be a sweet look.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, like, if you look at some of the other Team City Connects, the lazy is like, you know, blue on blue with just like a different name across the chest, right? This is kind of lame. You know, I don't know. I need to see, I think we need to see the new City Connects for the teams this year. Because this is the first year of the refresh for the teams that got in the first year.
Right,
and see what they do, if they're going to keep their colors or if they're going to change their look completely. Because, you know, the Boston ones were, I think, the first year. And, like, the City of Boston flag is the blue and yellow, right? And they look like UCLA.
Right.
Are they going to keep those colors? Or are they going to flip to a different, like, Red Sox look? Or, you know, Miami's is you know, an old Cuban team, right? And those are sweet.
Yeah, but the Sugar Kings.
Yeah, the Sugar Kings, So, like, are they going to keep with those colors? Are they going to flip to a Miami style? So I think when you start seeing how the other teams do theirs, it might kind of open up our eyes. Because maybe the first year is more uniforms based on your city, and then the next year with the City Connect, it's like maybe everybody's going like retro or something like that.
Or maybe you're just like a big fish taco.
Just
if they go with minor league jerseys, I'm going to be out. Everybody's dressed like a taco, or we'll have Craig's dog.
Like
we'll have Sammy the dog in the front.
Margarita,
the Chihuahua,
now we're talking.
Chihuahua and the pug. I don't know. I'd like to see like a retro. We already have like how many uniforms can you have? Four? What's the Nike allotment? I forget what
it
is. But we get a special exemption for the military Sundays. So it's not like we have like a retro ready available. It's already probably made. They probably already made it.
Well, they started working on it years ago. I remember talking to a few front office people about it. Like they started working on it years ago, and they collaborate with Nike to try to find like the right color scheme and fit and how they want it to look. Fernando Tatis Jr. talking to the media right now. He says his leg feels amazing.
Amazing.
And he feels 100%. He isn't concerned about his leg impacting him during the upcoming season. His body and his swing are in a great spot. He's focused on the players that are here.
But us too.
Yes. And his head is in the right spot. He feels second to none. Fernando's feeling like Fernando. I think that's pretty clear here.
Well, you know, it's a decent place to build out of, because we were talking a little bit about Fernando last segment, but I feel like in a weird way, ever since the contract was signed, one of the best days in Padres franchise history, right? Spring training 2021, statue contract, Fernando Tatis Jr. I literally went and bought full season tickets the next morning.
Yes.
Because I'm like, if you commit to him, I commit to you. And that's what I talk about when I say a virtuous cycle. You commit to players, you commit to spending, you commit to being good. The fans commit back to you.
Yeah.
And then that becomes, instead of a vicious cycle, it's a virtuous cycle. It's something that's growing upon itself, and everyone gets better as a result. But I do feel like since that, it's just been bad luck, bummer, / self-imposed wounds for Fernando Tatis Jr., the six shoulder subluxations in 2021, right? 42 homers, six times his shoulder pops out during the course of that year. Then we get to 2023, the injury, the rehab, the suspension, right? Misses an entire year, comes back 2022, you know what I was saying. 2022 suspended, 2023 out for 20 games, comes back but he's finding himself, right? Yeah. His age 23 year was kind of lost because he had lost his age 22 year, so all of 23 was just getting his legs under him, getting the back in familiarity with the league. He comes out last year, he's looking like a brand new player, and then the leg, then the stress reaction. All of a sudden, now we got a new problem for Fernando Tatis Jr. Well, the idea of it all being in the rearview mirror, put it all behind you, you're going forward. Now dream of a 150-game Fernando Tatis Jr., age 25 season, full strength, full confidence, ready to go. That could be an 8-WAR player in Big League Baseball very easily.
Yeah, and he has grown so much since he first came into the league and since he went through the suspension and since he's gone through the injuries. He's just grown as a player in so many ways, and I think that, you know, he's someone who's ready to show the world again that the suspension didn't stop him. You know, that doesn't end his career. That's not going to be what he hangs his head on. He's going to move forward, and he's going to show everyone what he still has in him, and he still has a lot in him. You want some Michael King?
Yes, I just saw that. I was reading over your shoulder. Go ahead.
Adam sent that to us.
He says, Michael King says he would be shocked if he's traded, but that anything can happen. He said he's been in a clubhouse with Kyle Higashioka since 2018. It's tough that he's no longer here, but he's proud of him for that contract. Confident he'll play well with the Rangers. He leaned on his veteran teammates in his first year. Praised Joe Musgrove's support and leadership. You know what's interesting? So he's talked about the arbitration, and in Kevin Acey's story yesterday, you know how we were like, he doesn't want to go to arbitration? In Kevin Acey's story from the community event that they were out in, Michael King has this quote where he's like, I was kind of looking forward to it. I wanted to see what it was like.
Fatal mistake.
It's done.
I'm kind of looking forward to that trip to the orthodontist. Maybe it'll be fun. Who knows? Maybe tightening screws on my teeth will be really enjoyable.
Shout out.
Sucker for pain.
He's walking
That's
by.
Right.
Yeah.
The great.
Yes. Alex Miniak, the great.
He doesn't get to cruise the ballpark ever.
Yeah.
Monster truck guru,
so, and
Alex
last thing on
that's right.
That was cool. Michael King says that he has not discussed a long-term contract extension with the Padres yet.
So, fair enough.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, I'll repeat what we said yesterday when the deal was announced. And he's got a quote in here as well saying, he's really glad the deal got done, avoided going through arbitration. It's a process that can weigh on a player, and now both sides can move forward. That's what we were all worried about. It wasn't whether the Padres won the number or that Michael King won the number, because the difference was $1+ million. It wasn't going to affect the bottom line that much. What you worried about was the Corbin Burns effect. What you worried about was the idea of a guy sitting
in a room,
hearing some dude in a suit that's not AJ talking about his career, talking about his Padres performance, finding all the negatives. Showing his fastball slider on Baseball Savant, you know, whatever it is, whatever they could find to try and put a negative case together. It's just hard to go from that, which is by definition, right? It's arbitration. It means it's two sides at loggerheads, to go from that to this, to a handshake, to a deal. Instead, what you are going from is from the position of a deal. They found an agreement. They found a chord. They came up with even a mutual option. We know it'll never be exercised, but they came up with this framework. Yeah. To me, that means you've got something now that you can build upon if you're going to extension talks.
Yeah, I saw this little nugget yesterday on MLB Trade Rumors, and it could have been taken from another article, but it's been more than 10 years since two parties agreed to exercise their end of a mutual option, and that was Matt Belisle.
Rockies, of course.
Rockies 2013. So those typically don't happen, but again, you have two sides that at least want to work together, and if they can make it work, look, I think the Padres want Michael King. I think he wants to be here. Whether or not they can make the money work, we'll have to wait and see.
Matt Belisle
of the Rockies, 2013.
Now there's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
Pepperidge Farms remembers.
Dylan Cease says that he is focused on the task at hand. When asked about how he deals with his name being mentioned in trade rumors, he added that he'd love to remain here in San Diego.
Of course he would.
Who wouldn't? Is anybody going to be like, man, I just really hated here?
I would love for Dylan Cease to remain in San Diego as well.
Well, I do know Dylan Cease will be on these radio waves later today.
Yes, he's going to be on with Matt Scraby and Tony Gwynn Jr. here during the 2 o'clock hours.
And so will Joe Musgrove. And, you know, it's so great to hear, too, from Joe Musgrove and Camp 44, everything that he's done while he's rehabbing. I know he can't be out there on the field with everyone, but he's still really being a part of everything.
Joe's 2:30 on Gwynn and Chris, and Dylan's right after at 2:40.
Well, stay right here, gang. Of course, we're here till 2 o'clock, and then they'll be rolling in right behind us. Let's take a quick timeout. Stay on clock when we come back. We were just talking extension. What I'd like to talk about is a breakout candidate from this team. Who's somebody maybe a little under the radar that could break out, that might surprise you with a performance that moves the needle for the 2025 Padres? That topic after this timeout, live from FanFest, Section 113. It's Annie and Elston on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
119 on the Fan. Welcome back. Annie and Elston here with you, live from FanFest. First time we've ever ventured out on a Saturday together.
That's right.
Good to see that everything still works. Annie settling back in. We were both just chatting with Charisma during the break. The great Charisma.
It's awesome. She's awesome. She said that the bullpen guys were high-fiving all the kids that were, like, running the bases, which is awesome. Like,
that's sweet.
Yeah, like the Padres bullpen players that were down there. So that's pretty cool.
They had a fun day in the community yesterday.
Yeah, they really did.
Imagine showing up to Jack in the Box for lunch and Jake Crone ordered an Angry Burger. Wait a minute. Is that to be like, what?
Jake, what's the matter, man? They ain't paying you enough?
Estrada volunteered to make the tacos over there. They were, like, cooking in the back and handing out burgers. And they went to the fire department, the police department, went to a couple schools. Pretty fun day.
I'm guessing Jeremiah Estrada has a personal relationship with the Jack in the Box taco.
That's right.
I just have a feeling a San Diego guy, you know, just the connection he's had to this town. I just feel like he's eaten more than six Jack in the Box tacos.
I can't go to Jack in the Box without having a taco, to be honest with you.
That's a must. A staple.
Whatever you're going to get, and they're going to be like, yeah, I'm throwing two tacos.
Yeah, yeah. with a weird vertical cheese in there.
That's the best part, the slice of American cheese in the taco.
So random. Is it a Mexican food? No, it is not.
No, it's not.
No, it is not.
I don't think that's meat either. I think Annie could actually have one of those
really
tacos.
I'm really not sure what it is.
That's why I cannot have one of those tacos. Right. It's because I don't know what that meat, that quote meat, is made out of.
I think it's tofu. I think you're okay.
Yeah. You might, yeah.
I think it's vegan. I think those tacos are vegan. Hey, Friday's in Lent for us Catholics. We got to get creative. I don't think that's meat. I think I can go ahead and eat the Jack in the Box taco. You never know.
All right, a little more Dylan Cease.
Yes.
He's working on being more consistent on the mound and on adding some extra pitches. He said he's using the experience he's gained, continuing to make adjustments. He's tinkering with an arm speed changeup and a two-seamer.
Nice.
Tinkering.
The thing that most analysts are the most excited about with Dylan Cease is that he lowered his walk rate last year.
It's always a plus.
And it was kind of his number one bugaboo as a pitcher. As I remember, when we traded for him, we were describing Dylan Cease as the right-handed Blake Snell.
Correct.
And he wasn't last year because he wasn't four innings, six walks, or five innings, four walks, 110 pitches, every once in a while. But more often than not, Dylan was able to give you those six innings last year. It was more to me, he was vacillating in terms of his consistency. It would be eight straight starts of shutout, no-hitter stuff, and then it would be eight straight starts of serving up home runs and putting his team behind three or four runs early on. This is the most important year of Dylan Cease's career. It's his one guaranteed look at getting to market in the prime of his career with the most money available to him. I truly expect him to have a great year. But I do kind of find it a little curious that he's talking about adding pitches this year.
And he could just be kind of messing with a few things and seeing what works for him. Sometimes Ruben Niebla, too, is really good about that, about a little bit of experimentation as long as it's used in the right places. But, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is his walk year. He's a Boris client. We've seen what the prices are for pitchers this year. If he has a good year, whatever team he's with, he's going to hit the market, and he should be able to command a really good contract.
Well, with Ruben Niebla and Yu Darvish, how could you not tinker with your pitches?
True.
You could show you about 15 different ways to throw a changeup.
Well, and he says he's tinkering with an arm speed change. Okay, Trevor.
Got
some time in spring training.
Trevor was talking a lot of changeups with us.
Yeah. I feel like that would be the first person I'd be asking about a changeup.
100%
organization.
Yeah,
I'll be talking, especially at spring training. He's always usually there, as you mentioned.
Yeah, he does the.
I'll be talking to him. I'm talking
Trevor
to you.
The time sessions. Yeah. He meets with pitchers, and it's really cool that he does that.
That's why I didn't mind when you was in the bullpen for the playoffs. You're going to see like guys coming out throwing new pitches you've never seen before. Yeah. Where'd you learn that? I don't know. You just kind of showed me during the half inning.
You know what's so cool about that is Yu Darvish goes in the bullpen wanting to learn from, like, the Stephen Kolek.
Right.
Yes.
And
right.
the Tom Cosgroves. And, you know, like, he goes in there and he's like, teach me what you know. Right. And I think when you're a young player like that, especially, and you've got a veteran who's as respected as Yu Darvish, you just, like, you feel like you made it. You know, like, here you are working with Yu Darvish and figuring out some new pitches and helping him learn some new grips. Pretty awesome.
It's like having an extra coach.
Yeah.
I mean, because he's going to learn, but then he's also going to teach you a lot of his stuff. And you got Ruben and Yu Darvish back there, plus all the other pitching coaches and bullpen coaches. It's nice to have.
All right, a question I asked you before the break. Now let's dive into it. I feel like we kind of talked a little bit about this earlier in the week, but what I'm looking for from everybody in the room here is somebody on this roster, somebody already on this roster, that might not be front of mind, but has the opportunity to break out and take a bigger role with this team this year than they did the year before. Who's got an under-the-radar Padres breakout candidate?
How under the radar are we talking here?
You know, not Jackson.
Well, yeah.
I mean, right. I'm going to go with the same answer I had the other day, which is Randy Vasquez.
Yes.
I think Randy has an opportunity to make a mark in this rotation. And to show that kind of he can be a back end, maybe even one day a front end starter in the rotation, I think that he's going to have that chance this year.
Yeah, and then I picked Morahone this week. And I, when you initially said like a sleeper pick, I was thinking Vasquez, but I'm thinking, you know, those guys in Brito, right? I mean, a couple of the guys, you know, obviously Vasquez and Brito who came over from the Yankees, and a guy like Morahone, these are guys that were all expected to be starters. that are brought in to be starters that have, you know, found themselves in the bullpen. And now Randy Vasquez did get a decent amount of starts and was thrown to the fire a little bit. But, you know, those three players can really, without putting the pressure on them, they could really, you know, make or break the Padres season. And if two of them end up being good or great, you know, that solves a lot of your problems, right, that the Padres have had. And why, you know, they were so, why it was so important for them at the time to try to get Roky Sasaki. You know, if you get Vasquez and Brito or Vasquez and Morahon to be able to have really good years, all of a sudden your pitching staff got a major upgrade and it didn't cost you anything, right? So I think that gives them gives the team a high ceiling for what they can accomplish. Is all of these players, like the ones that we have mentioned, you know, plus the second year of Waldron, you know, what you can see out of Hoeing, you know, those tweener bullpen starter guys, that sets the ceiling really high for this team because, you know, you don't really know what you're going to get out of those players. Could make the floor maybe a little bit lower because if they all don't perform, then all of a sudden it might go the other way. But that really sets the win-losses, you know, a lot higher and a lot lower than you would expect with the core group that you already have. I think those tweener long relief guys that could go either way are going to be the big determining factor on where the Padres finish this year.
All right. When we did this exercise during the show during the week, I brought up Jeremiah Estrada. I'm a big believer in Jeremiah Estrada. I think he has the ability to step into a higher leverage role this season and to inhabit it all year. Whereas last year he kind of started in the eighth inning. He wound up back in the fifth or sixth inning.
Right.
Had the illness along the way. But I want to bring up somebody else so that we just don't repeat the, repeat the last segment. And that's Yuki Matsui.
Yeah.
You know, and follow my forensic thinking here, all right? Yuki Matsui comes out of Japan. He's dealing with a larger baseball for the first time in his career. He was given a five-year investment by the San Diego Padres. A.J. Preller looked at this young man and he said, I see an impact Major League Baseball reliever in Yuki Matsui. Beginning of the year, pretty decent. Okay. Not amazing. Okay. He gets that one save opportunity in Kansas City. It doesn't work out. Felt like for 2 months after that, Yuki was ball one, ball two, ball three, ball four, right? He was always missing the zone against left-handed batters. They took him out of leverage, right? They pulled him all the way back, kind of put him back in the workshop for the second half of the season. And then, very quietly, during the second half of the season, because he was low leverage, you didn't really notice it. But that walk rate cratered. He went from walking everybody to not walking everybody. The strikeout rate improved. He stopped serving up as many home runs. But you just didn't feel the impact because at that time you've got Scott, you've got Adam, you've got Suarez, right? And so he was pitching the seventh of a game they were losing, and they weren't losing very often. I have a feeling this winter is a full reset for Yuki Matsui. He goes back in. He's had the opportunity all winter to recognize where he faltered, to recognize the steps he took to get better. And I think when you get back to an April MLB situation, that's where Schilte can start to mix him back in to leverage, can start to work him into a big sixth inning at bat against Corbin Carroll, right? Or a big sixth inning at bat against Max Muncy along the way. And if that happens and he clicks in, well, all of a sudden now, instead of losing Tanner Scott and not replacing him, maybe you're losing Tanner Scott and Yuki Matsui's replacing him.
I'd slot Yuki in as a Tanner Scott quite yet.
But
he's got he could have a high upside for sure. Yuki Matsui, as we talked about the other day, that the article that he did with Japan, you mentioned Tanner Scott, and it's like he said when those guys came in, saw the difference between how that part of the that part of the bullpen was and how he was. And he realized, I've got to make a jump to be like the Tanner Scotts, the Jason Adams, I've got to make a jump here in this bullpen and go about my training differently, go about my regimens differently during the week. And he learned that from seeing those guys come in at the deadline. It was like, you know, we joked about it last year. You had like tier A of the bullpen, and then the trade deadline hits, and they're suddenly tier B, and you've got the new tier A of the bullpen, and that's kind of who the Padres rode for the rest of the season. So you saw like that big jump between kind of the elite bullpen guys and the rest of the bullpen, and I think that those guys will learn from that. You know, for him, the adjustment coming from Japan, having to adjust to a whole new way of life, food, accommodations, acclimation to what life is like in the United States, not to mention big league hitting, not to mention just being part of a team and playing a different kind of season than he's used to playing in Japan. All of that is just wear and tear on you mentally and physically. For me, Yuki Matsui has to trust his stuff. He's got to feel confident in himself, and he's got to trust what he has. Stop throwing so many balls. I think that's just part of being confident and having trust in your stuff. And I think that Ruben Nieva probably gave him some assignments to work on in the offseason. He's going to come in having done that and hopefully feeling a lot better about his foundation.
I know it sounded like a really hyperbolic thing to say, but now I just want to, for the record, all right? And listen, Tanner Scott broke into the big leagues at age 22. Yuki Matsui broke into the big leagues at age 28. So
is he 28?
Yeah.
Wow.
He was 29 this year.
Okay.
So his last year was his age 28 season. But last year, Yuki Matsui, first year in the big leagues, 64 games, 3.73 ERA, 1.10 ERA plus, FIP of 3.92, WHIP of 1.165. Those numbers are pretty good. Tanner Scott's first year in the big leagues, first full year in the big leagues, 5.40 ERA, 53 innings, 76 strikeouts, but his FIP 3.4, his WHIP was 1.5. In fact, Tanner Scott didn't have a WHIP under 1.5 until his seventh year in Major League Baseball.
Pretty incredible, seeing what he is now.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So,
you never know.
Point being, you couldn't have looked at Tanner Scott in 2022 when he pitched, 20 saves, but a 4.31 ERA, 5 losses, 30 earned runs in 62 innings, and go, that's going to be the next dominant left-handed reliever in baseball. But he made adjustments. He kept growing as a player. There's no reason Yuki Matsui can't keep growing as a player.
Yeah, I never want to put a ceiling on a player. And absolutely, he can become an elite pitcher in the big leagues and someone that is a big threat to any hitters that are coming in the box. For Yuki Matsui, too, just the fact that, like, he's going to have this whole year under his belt and be able to build upon it and have guys like Tanner Scott that he watched, I think is going to be a big deal. But for the – I lost my train of thought there. But for the Padres, they need that because they signed him to a four-year – what was it, four-year 28 or something?
I think it was 5 years.
Him and
maybe
Peralta.
Maybe 5 years?
Him and Wandy Peralta got some long deals.
My brain came back on just now. You need that. You need that from him. You need Yuki Matsui to step up because you've got him. You believed in him for a reason, and you've got him now for several years, and that's a big chunk of your payroll, at least for a reliever, that you need to get some production out of.
Well, the good thing about the bullpen, if you have question marks about any part of your game, the easiest thing, or should I say the cheapest thing to acquire at a deadline is a bullpen arm.
Yeah.
Right.
Unless it's a closer, but I don't think that needs to be the case with the Padres. They got a handful of guys that can close, and it always seems like whoever they throw back there to close in this organization usually does very, very well. So if your biggest problem at the deadline is bullpen help, it's a lot easier to acquire bullpen arms because they don't cost a lot in terms of how much they get paid, and they don't cost a lot in terms of prospect capital or anything like that. It's a lot different than if you need starting pitching, which costs a lot, or a major position player or bat at the deadline. So if that's the case at the deadline, then Padres are in a really good spot. You can find bullpen arms.
But you're paying Yuki. What are you paying him, $5
million? Yeah, I was just going to say, here's my last brick in the wall I'm building of Yuki Matsui breakout, is the Padres are anticipating him to break out because his year one salary was $3.25. His year two salary is $5.5. He got a major raise this year, and then it goes $5.75, $6.5, and $7 million. In 2028, $7 million is an impact reliever in Major League Baseball. So the Padres believe that this young man is not an eighth reliever in a bullpen. They believe he is a top three reliever in a bullpen.
And he'll have to make those jumps as it goes from year to year. It might not all happen this year, but for sure, hopefully a jump from his first year to his second year. And he mentioned Yu Darvish a lot when he talked about what he learned in his first year and how he wants to emulate himself. He talked a lot about Yu Darvish and learning from Yu Darvish and being around Yu Darvish. Yuki Matsui definitely has a bond with him. Yu Darvish just talked to the media, said he feels really good physically.
Okay.
During spring training.
Good to know.
That's good.
Said that you always feel like there are things to make yourself a better pitcher. He's still working on those. But he also said that Roki Sasaki made his own decision. He said the Padres made a great pitch and greeted him with respect. But unfortunately, they came up short. Darvish didn't have an opinion on whether or not Sasaki's mind was already made up. He said you'd have to ask him.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to answer
that. Yeah, go ahead and ask him. See what he says, you know? You can wish in one hand and, well, never mind.
That's $7 million for Yuki, by the way, is a player option.
Ooh.
So, so there you go. It's a good point.
The Padres definitely need him to be exactly what Craig is trying to build him into being. Otherwise.
Otherwise, that option's getting picked up.
Yes, absolutely, for $7 million as part of the $117 towards the luxury tax already for 2028.
Hey, we've made a lot of commitments to this team. Here's the good news. It's a pretty dang good team.
It is.
So there's people look at the downside of commitments. There's a major upside to commitments, too, which is you get to keep those players.
Right.
You don't have to rebuild your team every year. We know who's at third. We know who's at second. We know who's at short. We know who's in right. We know who's in center. We know who our ace pitchers are. We know who our ace relievers are. All we need to do is figure out the edges. Fifth starter, left fielder, backup catcher, DH. Sixth starter, seventh starter. These are the things the Padres need in order to be locked in for 2025. And as we are often reminded, AJ doesn't always get to the opening line and have everything done.
True.
Like many, many times we've gotten to opening day and it's like, yeah, we've still got Rugi Odor and David Dahl in right field. We're going to figure that out as we get going. We're going to figure things out. Stephen Kolek pitched the eighth inning of game two last year. He pitched the eighth, all right? Like, so things will be one thing in game one, another thing in game 40, and another thing entirely at game 100.
He likes the night before opening day moves, too. He's made a lot of those in his career.
Yeah,
what's coming up this year?
That's right. They acquired Craig Kimbrel right before the season started.
I remember that.
Very much. And then last year, obviously, with Dylan Cease, they're boarding the plane to Korea, and Dylan Cease becomes a Padre.
Remember he did that, too, with Taylor Rogers and someone else. It was the first.
Yeah, the
they're
Chris
playing
Paddock
Diamondbacks.
Deal. Yeah.
The first week of the season, he did something.
Yeah, he made that move, and then Arias is in the middle. He's not afraid to make a move at any point.
Every time you tell that story, wherever he is in the world, Stephen Wilson just has a chill go down his back. Just like, oh, God.
I still feel so bad for him. I mean, he was sitting at the picnic tables at spring training with his girlfriend, or I can't remember, his girlfriend or his wife, getting ready to board the plane to Korea. And you find out you're being traded.
South side of Chicago.
Hey, Stephen, come here for a minute. I bet you it was just like that. Hey, Stephen, come here for a second. Hey, buddy.
And that's you know.
It's even worse.
You are a Chicago.
It's even
White
worse
Sox.
Just because of how the White Sox play.
And if you're Dylan Cease, you're waiting for that. I mean, you're going. Is that going to happen? And when for me this season? You know, and maybe it won't at all. But there is going to always be that feeling kind of hanging over you of like, hey, who's coming to tap me on the shoulder and let me know I need to go talk to AJ Preller or I'm getting answer the phone and find out that you're being traded. And you know, you try to compartmentalize that as best you can. And these guys are so good at doing that, but it's still there. I mean, it still lingers in your mind.
Does Dylan Cease look AJ in the eye?
Well, he's
right
up on
now?
The stage
you know
with
I mean?
Him
like,
right now.
Yeah, does he look
he
him in the eye?
He should just ask him.
Yeah.
He should be like, hey, man. Hey, bro, you training me?
Yeah, does he come up and give him a big hug and look at him dead in the eyes and go, are you keeping me or not? Or is it like, if I don't look at him, maybe he'll forget and then he won't trade me and then I get to stay here? Like,
if I'm Joe Musgrove, I just bring it up. So you're going to trade this guy or what? Just make it awkward for everybody?
Yeah,
make it a fan fest.
That's right. Everybody's like, whoa! Freaks out.
Yeah, no. All right, let's take our last break here on our Saturday Scrub Show. Scrabes is here. Tony Gwynn Jr. is on his way. We got two more live hours of broadcast for 97.3 The Fan from Padres Fan Fest 2025. When we come back, potential extension candidates, any chance something gets done before opening day, potential trade candidates. There's a lot of chance something gets done before opening day, maybe before the opening day of spring training. And how do you keep the virtuous cycle going between the team and the fans? We'll talk about all that before we hand over the headsets to Gwynne and Elston. Saturday Scrub Show Edition, live from Padres Fan Fest on The Fan. We're just talking to Ethan, one of our listeners out here. And then I heard I heard the Far Side in the background. I'm like, wait a second. Is that us?
Back on.
That would be us.
Is that Elston's music I hear?
Yeah.
By God, is that the Far Side? Yes,
here
it
comes
is.
Craig.
1:45 is the time. One more segment here of Annie and Elston. Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scraby standing by. Chris Ello is on the road with Aztecs women's basketball. But they will be here starting at 2 o'clock, rolling from 2 to 4. And coming up in the second half of their first hour,
2:30.
Joe Musgrove, 2:40, Dylan Cease. So you'll get to hear from the right-hander whose arm is in, I don't know, a brace of some sort, and then the right-hander who's healthy and ready to roll.
He's wearing a jacket right now, hiding the arm.
Not bad.
You know, too, the second he's clear to do anything, he will be working
his
tail off
so
to make sure that he can get in as much work as his doctor will allow at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. So it's
pretty
good.
You know, I don't need Joe to be in the hyperbaric chamber this spring. He's going to miss the year. We all know he's going to miss the year. Be ready for spring training next year. That's this time next year. I want this interview up there on the stage for Joe Musgrove to say, I feel great. I've been throwing curveballs. I've been throwing sliders. Everything is snapping. Arm velocity is back. No restrictions. Here I go, full guns to 2026.
Yeah, Joe's got a good plan. He'll be working with the team and has a good plan in terms of just how he needs to approach this. But the good news is that he's feeling well. He's been hitting all the benchmarks to get to this point so far, and that's what you would hope, right? I mean, you just want to be coming out of that feeling as good as you possibly can and having every time the doctor look at you say, okay, good news. We can move on to the next thing.
All right, a couple quick questions before we get out of here. I'm going to give you an A, B, C, D on this one. And I think I know
where we're playing the match game?
Almost. But I think I know where we're all going to land, but I'm going to ask the question anyhow. A, Luis Arraez contract extension. B, Michael King contract extension. C, Jackson Merrill contract extension. D, no extension. Opening day, A, B, C, or D.
Are you saying most likely to happen?
What do we think would happen? What do we think is going to happen?
D. Nothing.
D. We all say D.
And I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. It's, I think if they're on your team still, if you still have Luis Arraez on your team, and heck, if you still have Dylan Cease and Michael King on your team, you're in a pretty good spot. You just got to worry about 2025.
I agree. I just the way everything is and the way that, you know, you saw the Michael King contract before, how they're trying to make things work. I can't see them giving out a contract extension before opening day. And the reality is, it's like, there's really no rush on a lot of those guys. I know they're free agents, or two of them are free agents at the end of the year. But at the same time, that doesn't mean you can't extend them during the season. That also doesn't mean you can't re-sign them at the end of the season either. I think you would want to use that advantage, right? Almost like in the NFL as a restricted free agent, and use that advantage like, hey, we have this negotiating window where we can get this guy under contract.
Yes.
But I just where everything is right now with the Padres, I just don't see that being very likely.
Okay, I agree with both of you, and I would pick D as well. However, having said that, I'm going to reiterate something I said earlier. I think there is a unique opportunity to sign specifically Michael King to a contract extension specifically before he throws his first pitch of 2025 in a regular season game. And the reason for that is as follows. He just came off his first full year as a starter. There is some risk associated with 2025, either the risk of injury because he just threw his career high in innings pitched, or the risk of regression because he just had such an incredible year. What if he has a slightly less incredible year? Well, if you make a deal now with Michael King, you get to bake that risk into the deal. And as a result, the average annual value goes down a little bit to reflect the risk the Padres are taking in making the extension. If Michael King goes out and throws 180 innings this year and strikes out 210 batters and has an ERA in the threes, he's going to market no discount at all, full price, Burns level price next season. I think until he gets rolling, you have this tight window that you could get something done.
Look, I think it would be great. I just don't know if while they're in this ownership lawsuit pursuit, if they can do that kind of deal right now. Now, who knows? Maybe they can. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe this is something that they're cooking up, that they're brewing. But if you're Michael King too, you're probably betting on yourself to have a good year, and maybe you want to see what you might be able to command at the end of the season, or what you might be able to do in free agency. But yeah, sure, I would love it if they get something done.
In a perfect world, it'd be nice to have him. And then again, with the same, you can say the same thing about Jackson Merrill, right? Too. I mean,
yes,
he has another great year. His price is going to continue to go up. And then all of a sudden you start losing your leverage on potentially getting him on a deal that he cannot refuse, right? And one of those Atlanta Braves, Arizona Diamondbacks, Milwaukee Brewers deals that they've done with their young stars, where it's a team-friendly contract in the grand scheme of things, instead of, and now Fernando's a team-friendly contract now, but when you signed him, you know, you waited a little bit to make sure he was the stud, and then he got probably a lot more than what he would have gotten if you gave him one of those deals. So, you know, when a lot of people complain about, like, well, why can't we make a deal that Atlanta did? You know, that's where you have to strike on those guys. So, same thing go the other way, though, too. Like, if, you know, King pitches okay, obviously, if, as a Padres fan, you're not thrilled about it, but his price goes down a little bit, makes it more opportunity for you to sign him. Same thing with, you know, with Merrill, if he has a sophomore slump, then all of a sudden, like, hey, we can strike while the iron's hot.
Right.
But it's kind of that game of trying to, like, find the best place to offer these extensions where they're playing well, they're proving that they can be long-term assets, but at the same time, how can we get that stock at the right spot before it really shoots up and becomes unaffordable?
You know, the guy I think that's a little bit luxurious to discuss, but I brought him up anyways, is Luis Arraez. And I feel, once again, there's a little bit of a soft spot right now where you could negotiate a deal, because he's coming off one of his worst seasons. I don't want to say worst, but one of his worst seasons. He's coming off of injury. He's a year from free agency. He's one of the most confusing players to evaluate in Major League Baseball. I'm telling you right now, half the teams in Big League Baseball simply wouldn't even offer him a contract.
Yeah.
In free agency, they'd feel like no matter what price it is, it's too much of a price. And Luis has been traded 2 years in a row, winning the batting title every time. I just think, like, yeah, there's one level where you could just do the same thing and trade him. There's another way you can just ride the season out and get a great year from him. But he does fit hand in glove with this group. And the 360, 350 hitting version of Luis Arraez is one of the better players in all of Major League Baseball. So I do feel like, at least, maybe Annie, it's as simple as it's a different world. It's the ownership situation, you know, and you just don't have that ability to go long. But gosh, you feel like he's another guy that you could get for 4 years without having to break the
bank. I think you said it, though. I think the Padres have the leverage in that situation because of so many teams that might not value him as much as maybe the Padres do. And so now, when you're competing against less teams, the price isn't going to rise as much.
Right.
So maybe they think, oh, we could probably compete for this guy during the offseason, where we don't need to get in there like we would have to do with King or Cease or Merrill, where all of a sudden it's through the roof and everybody wants him.
Right, right.
Yeah, I mean, he wants to be in San Diego. I think he would love to have some stability for him and his family. Loves this team. If you're the Padres and you know that's the approach you want to take, the gap-to-gap, the line drive hitting, the just pushing guys from base to base and not always depending on the long ball, if this is what you want for years to come, I mean, that why not get him? Why not try to put him into your lineup for the next few years? I just don't know if they're at a place where they are able to lock those contracts down. I don't know what their financial future is for the next 3 years.
Right. Well, I guess that leads to the last thing I'd want to say, and I know we're on the way out, which is every time I see the fan base of the San Diego Padres, every time I come to a packed Petco Park, I come back to the idea of a virtuous cycle, the idea that the Padres have invested in their team, now the fans invest in the Padres. The Padres invest in the team, the fans invest in the Padres. It's a cycle that grows in the right direction, and I want to see that continue in 2025. I want to see a Padres team that invests in itself, and then we invest right back in them, and that's how we go. And you don't win the World Series every year. Nobody in San Diego is bred to go, well, if we didn't get the World Series, it's a failure, because we've never won one. So what would we know about that? What we know is invest in this team, we invest back in you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to see all these fans out here.
All the fans
beautiful
that invested in us today.
And
Thank you.
Yeah, fun to be out here and to talk to Jackson Merrill, Trevor Hoffman. Go back and listen to those interviews. They were in the first hour, beginning of the show, if you missed them. But just an overall good day. I think I've seen a lot of fans smiling and having a good time, so that's a good sign.
Quinn and Chris are up next with Matt Scraby and Tony Gwynn Jr. For Braden Soprano and Annie Halbert, I'm Craig Elston. Thank you, FanFest.